Hey, it's Zach. The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven. And don't forget to check out Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective on the latest episode. Wendy, Royce Young, and Bobby Marks, all friends of the program, discuss the near future for Giannis Antetokounmpo, and the Bucks. You can get the Hoop Collective wherever you find your podcasts.
And now, the Low Post.
Welcome to the Low Post podcast live on Labor Day. The NBA on Labor Day, everything is weird and depressing and weird and weird and weird. And to talk about what promises to be certainly the most star-studded second-round series amid the four and the one that maybe has potential to be the most interesting, I don't know, Rockets-Lakers. Welcome on ESPN's Tim McMahon and Dave McMenamin. How are you guys?
Well, I was a lot better before I saw McMenamin's ugly mug.
Sure. I was doing a lot better before I had to hear Tim's terrible insult. So we're doing great.
Well, Dave comes on to the pod. We can all see each other, and Dave greets us in a nice hotel room. No children running around. With like a nice fancy coffee. There it is again. Coffee in a glass mug. It looks like it's a little foam in there. Is it a latte?
It is a latte. Yeah.
Look at still that. Pumpkin spice latte in your room, Dave?
Of course, hey, he feels really bad for us. He feels really, he feels really bad for us sitting on the couch of the comfort of our own homes while he's getting worked to the bone there in Disney World.
Can you go to Disney World? If you wanted to, could you go to Disney World?
We can go to Disney Springs if we wanted to.
What's that?
It's like, okay, you ever heard of Universal Studios in L.A.? So yeah. Something called Universal City Walk, which is like a bunch of shops and restaurants attached to Universal Studios. It's like the same idea. Shops and restaurants attached.
It sounds like it should be a water park. Disney Springs should be a water park. Yeah. Well, that doesn't sound exciting to me at all. All things Disney are exciting, actually.
A Bon Jovi cover band at Disney Springs. Quick aside.
Okay. So was it good?
It was a great night to have an off night on the NBA beat, for sure.
All right. A Bon Jovi cover band with 10 Bon Temps. That sounds like
with Vardy. It was a couple years ago. With Bon Temps.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay.
Let's talk about Rockets-Lakers. It's 1-1 after the Lakers grinded out a not must-win, but important win, Game 2 victory in the bubble, wearing the Black Mamba jerseys, which have really grown on me. I think those look nice on TV. I don't want to lead you guys anywhere. I just want to open it up. Tim, let's start with you. You know the Rockets as well or better as anyone in our house. How do you think they are feeling after a split of the first two games? How does this series look for them? And what's the most interesting thing to you going into Game 3 from their perspective?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things they feel really good about, but there's one major concern, and that is they need Russell Westbrook to play probably at a superstar level to win the series. And he is really struggling. And basically last night, and wisely, the Lakers essentially say, hey, we're going to take the ball out of Harden's hands as much as possible and dare them to beat us with Russell Westbrook. And he's just not capable right now. And, look, let's include the context, okay? He's coming off of not only a coronavirus, but then a strained right quad. It was a little bit of a surprise he was even able to play at all last series. He's been completely out of rhythm. The fact he attempted 7 threes last night tells you just how uncomfortable he is. That's the most threes he's attempted in a game.
That's like that's like one of the 5 most shocking stats of the entire playoffs, that Russell Westbrook took 7 threes. I didn't even realize that. I looked at the box score this morning, and for some reason that number didn't – I mean, I can picture 4 or 5. 7 is like – 7's a lot. Like, there was a time when Steph Curry took 7 threes. You're like, wow, that's a lot of threes by Steph Curry, like 5 years ago or something.
Well, if you see 7 on three-point attempts in the box score for him and 7 on turnovers, the Rockets are probably losing that game. And so, fair or not, they need Russ to be the superstar that he was really from January through the suspension of the season. And I don't know if he can get back in that form, given all the circumstances here.
Well, if they lose this series, let me step back. I said before the series that I thought this was a coin flip, And I was very, very tempted to pick the Rockets to win. I would have picked, I wish I had, because I would have been the only one of our ESPN quote-unquote experts to pull the trigger on that pick. 3.5 games into Thunder Rockets, I was convinced. Their defense was flying around. They were making all the correct reads. We can talk about their defense later. And then just like they just did what they do, which is some kind of weird meltdowns, some just random crazy stuff happened. And all of a sudden, they're a Lu Dort 3 from being out in the first round. We all know Lu Dort in game 7, you can't contain him. I mean, it's like the guy's going to make threes in game 7. And I just was like, I can't trust these guys in a big game. I think this series is there for them. I think it's there for them to win. I worry a little bit. Like, I thought last night was there for them. When they came back in the third quarter last night and took the lead, it had the air of, uh-oh, they figured out this matchup. They know how to play this team. And for the Lakers to come back and get that game was a really, because nothing is easy for the Lakers unless they get a turnover and it's a fast break, was really impressive. But that game ended and I thought to myself, whew, I wonder if Houston is going to regret that one. Obviously, you regret everyone. But the longer this goes, I just know in game 7, I trust LeBron. In game 7, I trust LeBron more than I trust anybody on the Rockets. And if the Rockets had gotten that game last night and gone up 2-0, they might have been able to start smelling like, we might be able to win this one in 5. Anyway, if they're going to lose this series, to me, they're going to lose it in the minutes that Harden is on the bench. Those minutes, if they can't tread water in those minutes, they're in trouble. And like those minutes were an absolute epic disaster last night.
Also, the minutes P.J. Tucker's on the bench.
Yeah, I noticed Jeff Green was like minus 1,000 last night, and P.J. Tucker was plus 1,000.
Yeah, and Jeff Green was great in the OKC series, but this is a different series. And P.J. Tucker makes life at least difficult for Anthony Davis. He's going to hit some difficult shots, no doubt, but P.J. makes it very tough on him. Jeff Green, you know, he tried to take a charge with his cojones. That didn't work out real well. But
you got to be Kyle Lowry to take a charge with their cojones. Kyle Lowry proclaiming that he has balls of steel. One of the great lines of the postseason. And by the way, we're not going to talk about Raptors Celtics because they're, by the time this posts, they will be playing in 4 hours. So Toronto fans, I'm not disrespecting that the Raptors won games 3 and 4. There's just no point in saying, well, let's talk about what's going to happen in game 5 when you're all going to be listening after game 5 has happened.
We're staying south.
Yeah, we're staying south. We're staying in Texas/LA for the most part. Dave, what's your vibe from the Lakers coming out of game 2? Are they at all rattled by how comfortable Houston seems to be in general? Do they feel like they've figured something out on defense? What's their vibe?
Well, for one, they feel like they found a formula that works with Anthony Davis, and Anthony Davis took a different approach. He was not waiting for the double to come. In game 2, it was catching the ball on the move. It was moving with intention. And quite frankly, you know, maybe this JaVale McGee left ankle pain was the best thing that could have happened to Anthony Davis as well, because McGee plays 8 minutes at center. Dwight Howard doesn't play, and you go full small ball with Davis really taking ownership of that position on both ends of the court. And to me, it all filtered around that. Obviously, LeBron was the closer. He was spectacular in the fourth. But the Davis piece should give them some confidence moving forward here, because Houston doesn't have an answer for him. As good as P.J. Tucker is, as much as an irritant P.J. Tucker can be, Anthony Davis at his best is a step above P.J. Tucker at his best.
I thought Anthony Davis he was 15 of 24 last night. How many of those makes did you watch and feel like, man, I'm tired after watching him hit that shot. Yeah. Like, tough, tough shots. I think to your point, I think the Lakers, everyone joked, not everyone, but there was a lot of snark when Avery Bradley got hurt. When Avery Bradley decided he wasn't coming to the bubble, rather. And I said on TV, like, I think people are underestimating what this loss means to the Lakers. This is the series where it hurts. Because he'd be guarding Harden, number one. And no one can guard Harden, but like, the Lakers really have no one who can guard Harden right now. Rondo did all right. That poke away steal. Don't forget that poke. Remember that poke away steal when they were kind of wheezing and he just did the pickpocket in the backcourt and got it. That was like, that felt important when it happened.
Yeah.
I just think the Lakers are going to have to play, to your point, their best shooting lineups almost the entirety of these games to have a chance to win, because they cannot isolate LeBron and Anthony Davis on the wing. If there's even if there's a center on the floor and bad shooters or too many so-so shooters, it's just too easy to help and recover. You see the difference when they clear the floor. LeBron has Daniel House up top, and he's just like, I can bully this guy all the way to the rim. The help isn't going to arrive in time. And Bradley is, you know, without him, he's a decent three-point shooter. He cuts really well off LeBron, which is really important. Shoots the corner three pretty well. Without him, even some of their small ball lineups, like Caruso and Kuzma combined this season, are 31% from three. Like, they're just not good shooters. Like, the math right now says these guys are not good shooters. So these their A lineups, the lineups that are supposedly optimizing their shooting, a lot of them are still kind of light on shooting. Like I think Houston can fare okay against those lineups, but I also think they're the Lakers' only hope. Dave, do you think even if JaVale is healthy, they're benching him next game?
I imagine Frank, because just the consistency piece that he's shown so far, he would start JaVale again and play him limited minutes. Because I don't see why I would need to change. I could be misreading that, but that would be the direction I'd go in. But certainly they've unlocked Anthony there, and quite frankly, they found, you know, some really effective stretch 5 minutes from Markieff Morris in game two, which I don't think they anticipated him to be that effective. Actually, Frank said after the game that he had planned to play Dwight some, and he went away from that because that was the hot lineup. Now, that lineup with LeBron, Markieff Morris, Rondo, Caruso, and Kuzma played 8 minutes together in game two, outscored the Rockets 35-14, and shot 14 for 16 from the field. And of those 14 shots, they had 10 assists. They only had two turnovers. They had six steals. I mean, they were, you know, obviously, just because that worked in that small sample size doesn't mean you can play that lineup for 35 minutes in game three. But if the Lakers have shooting, they're a different team. Obviously, I'm not saying that something's so groundbreaking, but you know, you can't expect necessarily five threes a game from Morris moving forward in the series. Yeah. But if you can get you two or three, that makes up a big difference when you're trying to chase, you know, one of the most prolific three-point shooting teams of all
time. But see, as you that lineup you just said, you just listed that lineup. As a general rule of thumb, if LeBron is the best shooter in any lineup, it's not a great lineup. And LeBron is the best shooter in that lineup. And so I'm just skeptical. I mean, obviously, Markieff Morris is not going to hit. I think he had 19 points in the whole playoffs until last night. And I'll eat my words. I just didn't think Markieff was going to give them anything meaningful. And he won them a game last night. And by the way, to win a championship, there's always, and the Lakers have, let's be clear, a long way to go to get out of this series. But there's always a game like that. There's always a Corey Brewer game. Or a Josh Smith game, or I mean, Josh Smith didn't win the championship, but there's always a Mike Miller game. There's always a game from a guy who comes out of nowhere and has a big game. That's just a thing that happens. Tim, you were going to say something. What do you want to say?
Well, you know, it's interesting because game one, the Lakers' big lineups actually fared a lot better than when they went small. And, you know, we are talking, obviously, tiny little sample sizes, but to me, if I'm the Lakers, I am careful about letting the Rockets dictate the style of the series. You know, as a matter of fact, I thought February 6th going all the way back, you know, it's the Rockets' first all-in on small ball game after getting Covington in the deal. I thought the Lakers made a mistake by matching up going small in the fourth quarter. And, you know, and they got obviously outplayed in that fourth quarter. And I think what kind of crystallized that for me was – a few weeks later when the Clippers came in town and obviously everyone's talking small ball this, small ball that. And Doc basically said, they can do what they want. We're playing our big guys and we're going to beat their asses in the paint. We're going to dominate the glass. We're going to, you know, score in the paint. And Zubas and Montrezl Harrell basically completely dominated that game. So I guarantee you this, if we get Rockets Clippers next round, the Clippers ain't adjusting to match up with the Rockets. They're basically going to say, you know, good luck dealing with this. This is the way we play, and, you know, we're going to pummel you. And, I think you can debate the logic of it, and I understand the reason behind it, but I do think that if you are the team that's – if you're the top seed and you're the team that's blinking and changing the way you play to match up with the underdog in the series, I think that benefits the underdog.
See, I I think the difference is that Zubats and Harrell are really good.
And there is
the,
that.
And the Clippers have more shooting than the Lakers. I get what you're saying. Look, again, like there's going to be small sample size. There might be a quarter where JaVale McGee has 6 offensive rebounds and totally changes the game. Like that may well happen. I just think, like, you watch the Lakers, Dave. I mean, you've watched them all year. Like, they have nothing going on offense. There is just they are dying. And this is, again, why they miss Avery Bradley a little bit. This sounds dumb to say. Avery Bradley's fast. Like, they're dying for... Imagine if they had Duncan Robinson on their team. Just someone who is moving around, doing something, causing chaos. They're so slow. And if you're going to trap Harden on defense, even if it's like 50% of the possessions, 25% of the possessions, that means you're in scramble mode behind those plays. And I thought when the Lakers were... I thought yesterday was one of... Doesn't show up on the box score. I think he was minus something. I think it was one of the best games Anthony Davis has played on defense this year. And that's saying a lot, because he was outstanding all year. He was everywhere last night. I thought Kuzma, after a bad defensive game in game one, had a really nice defensive game, making reads on the fly, switching here, veering over there, reading switches fast. And it's just hard. Like, Dwight Howard can't do that. JaVale McGee can't do that. Like, they can't scramble like that. So, you know, we'll see. But I just, like, the Lakers, they're going to win. It feels to me after 2 games that the Lakers are just going to win this on the back of superhuman efforts from their 2 best players. And I think even, like, LeBron almost had a triple-double yesterday. I think he's 1 assist away, or 1 rebound. I can't remember which. It just feels like there's going to have to be at least 1 game in this series, maybe 2, where LeBron is just playing bully ball the whole game. Just like, you have Eric Gordon on me, I'm posting every time. You have Daniel House on me, I'm posting every time. And I get that the doubles are coming, the spacing isn't great. I'm LeBron James. You're just not keeping me away from the basket. And for him to have those kind of games, I just think they'd have to maximize. It just feels like that's what they need. They're going to need a monster LeBron game, at least a couple of them.
Which is, obviously we know how good LeBron is, but, you know, there was a sequence in game 2 where it was the 3rd quarter, there was a foul that went against Rondo, Vogel decides to use his challenge. It seems like, oh, maybe it's interesting that you would do this at this stage of the game. Ends up being the 5th foul on Russell Westbrook, and I think the next possession that LeBron had it, he goes straight at Westbrook and gets to the cup because he knows Westbrook, you know, can't foul and get himself out of the game. And so, like, that type of recognition he's going to bring. I don't know if you need to get 40 points from LeBron, you know, and maybe I'll be mocked by bringing this name up, but the Lakers' 3rd leading scorer in the 1st round was Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. When you talk about them not having speed or not having, you know.
He and Caruso are the closest things they've got.
Right. But when KCP's locked in, he gives them pace. He's a guy who can shoot out in transition and take a outlet pass, or just even, you know, suck the defense in by sprinting to the corner and giving that space that LeBron uses so well in the open court. And so, you know, I don't think they have the perfect personnel. I think I picked them in 7 over the Rockets. I think it would be a struggle. I think a Clippers series, if that happens, would be a struggle as well. But this is not going to be in, like, the analytics numbers, but they have that belief. They have belief, and that matters.
2 lineups I like that are going to be big for them. Last night they played it a lot. KCP, Green, LeBron, Kuzma, Davis. I think gun to his head, Frank thinks that's their best lineup. That lineup is minus 18 so far in the playoffs, which is a tiny sample size. It doesn't mean anything. It was plus 25 in 43 minutes in the regular season. That's kind of the model of the lineup that they have left. The other one that I'm surprised we haven't seen, frankly, Caruso, KCP, Danny Green, LeBron Davis. That's only played 5 minutes the whole playoffs, plus 11 in 5 minutes. It was very good in very limited minutes in the regular season. I just think Caruso just helps their team. Like, when Caruso's on the floor, they play well. He helps their team. Like, he only played 14 minutes or 16 minutes in game 1. That was not enough. He had 5 fouls. He had 16 points or something. That lineup, I think, is going to have to appear here and there at some point for them to win. And obviously, Rondo emerging complicates that. And I thought Rondo, you know, he's a very polarizing player, but he was helpful last night. But I just, you know, through 2 games, Houston should feel pretty good. I think Houston, the Lakers are like, our formula is our stars have to have unbelievable games. And Houston's formula is we're going to swing the ball and get a lot of open shots.
Yeah. But at some point, Russell Westbrook does have to play at a star level for sure. And we also, I think, have evidence that the deeper a series goes, the less of a star that James Harden is. So, you know, those concerning. And, you know, we're back to a Mike D'Antoni playoff rotation as well. And it'll be interesting to see if that gets shortened even further. You know, do Jeff Green's minutes get cut? You know, if P.J. Tucker's not in foul trouble, the answer there is yeah, they at least get trimmed a little bit. But, you know, Austin Rivers played 7 minutes. McLemore is, you know, barely playing at all, a few minutes last night. And so it's a, you know, it's about a 7-point two-man rotation right now.
Well, let's just say it out loud. The Rockets have been at their best with Harden as the only star on the floor this year, and at their worst with Russ as the only star on the floor this year. And look, I'm not saying that doesn't mean everything, right?
Yeah.
You are still going to need Russell Westbrook to have some games to beat a team as good as the Lakers. You can't just say we have to play Russell Westbrook 15 minutes. It's not realistic. Okay.
See, here's the thing. I think I don't think you can just look at the Rockets' numbers for the season as a whole. I think you got to separate into segments. And that's kind of the Russ coming off knee surgery, getting comfortable with the center on the floor part of the season versus the, here's, you know, Russ in an open floor. And, I mean, Russ for a 2.5 month stretch averaged like 32, 9, and 7.
And those numbers.
53% from the floor. And Harden struggled then. Harden, I thought, hit the wall physically. So we still have not seen, and I don't think it's, well, if Harden's going, Russ can't. No, I just think it's just the way it's gone with different circumstances. We have not seen their two stars both firing on all cylinders. And unfortunately, I think it's going to be very unlikely that we do see that just because Russ is not healthy. And he's so far out of rhythm right now.
Well, you're right, and you hit it on the head. Those numbers the on-off numbers I talked about started trending a much better direction after like Christmas or something. The Russ only numbers were positive after Christmas. They're back to being negative. And if he's going to play, if he's going to have games like he did yesterday in Game 2, and they're going to double James a lot. When they have so much shooting around James, it really gets harder to double him. And it's a little easier when Russ is on the floor, unless he's going to be the crazy rampaging, you know, drive and kick and spray and all that. Yeah. I think they could have gotten away playing him less last night. Like the odd man out in crunch time continues to be Daniel House. And I actually think I'm kind of falling in a little bit of love with Daniel House in the playoffs. That dude is just good. He helps their team. He's good on both ends. He's a willing shooter. He competes like all hell. And I thought like Game 6 against the Thunder, when Eric Gordon was still in whatever haze that he was in that he's now broken out of, I thought House should have played over him in crunch time. I thought House should have played over Russ last night in crunch time.
Right, and I'm willing to bet that the thought crossed D'Antoni's mind, and we also all understand there is no chance in hell D'Antoni will actually do that or realistically can do that. And it's funny, Mac-10, when you were mentioning Russ couldn't pick up a sixth foul, I don't know that some folks of the Rockets would have necessarily minded if he picked up that sixth foul early in the fourth quarter there. You know, Russ sat for a stretch of like a few minutes in the fourth quarter, and I was thinking, oh boy, I mean, maybe D'Antoni's got the cojones to do this. I mean, I guess technically his contract expired. You know, he might as well. But, you know, obviously if he benches Russ during crunch time, it's just all kinds of ridiculous controversy.
It is, but at some point you got to win. You got to try to win. Like, sometimes you got to make an uncomfortable decision to win. And, again, it's Russ. These are human decisions that are going to have huge ripple effects in your locker room, you know. And it's much easier for us to say it than otherwise. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning, wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can. If that's a 10-minute low impact class, they've got those. And when you're ready, take it up a gear
with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
Dave, what did you think of the defense they played on Harden last night? Clearly they came out and they decided we're going to mix it up. We're going to play a little zone. We're going to trap him. But a lot of times we're going to trap him with like 10 on the shot clock or 8 on the shot clock. And we're going to have to scramble behind that. What did you think of it? Is it sustainable, or are the Rockets, you know, remember, Harden's been dealing with this since November. Like, just the Nuggets hard trapped him for an entire game. The whole league copied it. Houston was confident they were going to be able to figure it out. They had enough shooting to figure it out. Is this sustainable, or are they just playing with fire and PJ Tucker corner threes?
I mean, you got to give them credit. You know, he goes from 36 to whatever, 27 in game two. But to me, the number that's concerning, he gets 13 foul shot attempts, and you still don't have someone who can just stay in front of him. As rugged and as determined as Caruso plays, he can't do it. LeBron's actually done it more possessions than I anticipated him to do through the first two games, but he's not going to do it consistently. Rondo was picking him up, you know, at 65 feet or whatever in the backcourt, and you know, I'm sure that has some cumulative effect of wear and tear, but no, Harden's still a problem for them. To me, what really concerns me, though, is, you know, Ty Lue, when I covered him in Cleveland, used to use this term. If you get an open shot, like off a swing where it's so wide open, he called it a butt-naked shot. And it's been a nudist colony for the Rockets so far through the first two games. They are getting these wide-open shots, and some of these shots are just what they want. Like, P.J. Tucker's probably gotten four or five shots in the corner. He's the best corner three-point shooter in the league through the first two games, where there's no one near him, and he's maybe gone 1 for 5 on those shots. They got lucky. But Gordon's hit a couple of those shots where there was no one within, you know, 50 feet of him. And I think Covington's hit a couple. And, you know, that, to me, shows a crack. And whatever the Lakers are doing defensive-wise that's working, there are those possessions where it's completely not working, and the Rockets are that good of a three-point shooting team where you're probably going to get burned if that continues. I think last night the Rockets shot like 41% from three. It was the first time all season where they lost a game where they shot 40% or better from three. So odds would suggest that if in game three they shoot 40% or better from three, the Lakers are going to lose that one.
I have two important questions for you. Number one, if PJ Tucker had to compete against four grizzly bears for a loose ball, do you think PJ Tucker would get the loose ball? I kind of think he would. I don't think
I wouldn't bet him out.
If an elephant were boxing out P.J. Tucker and the elephant had position on the inside, I think P.J. Tucker would move the elephant out of the way and get the rebound. It's well,
He might not get the rebound, but he'd at least move the elephant out of the way and hope that Russ or Harden could come swoop in for the rebound.
That see, elephant like wants no part of P.J. Tucker. Absolutely PJ no part maybe, of it.
P.J. may be concerned about the elephant scuffing his exclusive sneakers he'd be wearing, though. So
he'll change at halftime.
Yeah, okay, all right.
If there are four grizzly bears trying to get a loose ball with PJ Tucker, I think PJ Tucker's coming out of it with some scratch marks, but I think he's getting the loose ball. Now, to your point, Dave, the Harden thing is so like I understand why a lot of people don't like watching Harden play. They think it's boring. I get it. Like he's playing one on one a lot, and we've been spoiled by this beautiful team basketball that lots of teams from the Spurs to the Warriors to the Hawks and all them have played. I just think he presents an interesting chess match for defenses that no other player in the league presents. So I'm always like, it's such a nice change of pace from watching all these games. There's nothing like a Rockets game. And I kind of like the gimmick defenses that come out and how Houston responds to those gimmick defenses. I thought the Lakers did a great job last night mixing it up and trapping him late where you only have time for a couple of passes. And if you can defend the first pass, if you get the first pass and you're not dead and you have a general idea of where the rotations are going to be, you have a shot to snuff them out or make them take a contested three. And the other thing, what they're betting on, and if you watch Harden, this happens a lot. What the defense is also betting on is when he gives it up, he's not going to get it back. When he gives it up with 10 on the shot clock, he's going to chill at half court.
and you're going to have to find a way to reset and play 4-on-4, but you're going to be playing 4-on-4 with Austin Rivers and Robert Covington and Daniel House and Jeff Green, and you're going to take your chances with that. And actually, I thought the butt naked threes, I thought two or three of them at least were plays on which they trapped, and the Lakers had the action pretty contained. Like, I remember one Austin Rivers drive on Markieff Morris where I'm like, I'm forcing Austin Rivers to hit a contested floater, and they crashed off P.J. Tucker in the corner, or somebody in the corner, I can't remember who. They kicked it over there for a wide-open three. I'm like, make Austin Rivers take a floater with 4 on the shot clock. A, he doesn't even want to. It's the Rockets. Mm-hmm. They, like, get penalized for taking a mid-range jump shot, probably. And B, it's an Austin Rivers floater. Like, make him make a floater. There was another one where Eric Gordon had the ball on the left wing with, like, 2 on the shot clock, and they were kind of in a zone, so it's maybe not equivalent. And LeBron just hard-doubled him out of nowhere. Like, he was totally covered. There was no motion at all. LeBron just doubled him and left P.J. Tucker in the corner for a thing. Like, what do you just leave Eric Gordon there with 2 on the shot clock? I thought the Lakers' rotations behind those traps were mostly really good. Now, you're going to lose some of those battles. Some of those swing, swing, swing are going to end up with Robert Covington making an open three. I thought if they had cleaned up their sort of last rotation, like the thing I just talked about, like the last help rotation that maybe wasn't totally necessary, they would have done even better. But let's, like, that is hard work. That is hard work. It's physically and mentally taxing. Because if you make one mistake, if two guys pause and, like, wait, who's going to the corner? Who's getting the driver? Or you make one false step the wrong way, you're dead. But I'm making those other guys make plays. I'm mixing it up so on 30 to 40% of Houston's possessions, I'm making those other guys beat me in 4-on-3 or 4-on-3.5. And I thought particularly Davis and Kuzma were really good in those situations last night.
Well, they, you know, the other thing is sometimes that first pass leads to a wide open Russell Westbrook jump shot, and the Lakers love that. That's exactly what they want. You don't have to worry about rotations then. You have to worry about rebounds. But I will say this. This is the best stretch of basketball Eric Gordon's played all season long. And, you know, that might be damning with faint praise. Obviously, he's had a rough year with the knee surgery, never really got back in rhythm, then the ankle early in the, the last scrimmage in the bubble, so on and so forth. But the fact that Eric Gordon is back to playing peak Eric Gordon basketball, where he's been really good defensively, and obviously he's got his work big time cut out for him as the primary LeBron defender, but he's at least very competitive on that end. And then he's back to, 6 of 12 from three last night. I think it's 3 straight 20-plus point games for him. That is a huge, huge deal for Houston. And him playing at that level allows them to at least have a shot last night, despite Russ playing as poorly as he possibly could have.
And Gordon is 14 of 29 on threes, starting with game 7 of the Thunder series. And again, you're right, that completely changes the Rockets. Like, Eric Gordon playing well, he's not going to shoot 50% from three for 10 straight games, but him playing well and being a threat, and being a threat off the dribble. Like, he just gets places. He doesn't even really beat his guy. He just kind of gets into him, and then he's at the rim. And defense is when they see somebody near the rim, even if they're covered, they come, and that just unlocks exactly what Houston wants. It's just your instinct. Like, he's at the rim. Yeah, he might be covered. He might be, the defender might have his arms up, but he's kind of getting close to pay dirt. Like, we got to come. And Eric Gordon's good at spraying the ball out.
Well, he's built like freaking Derrick Henry. I mean, people don't understand. Like, people laughed when and I love D'Antoni. Everybody's top secret. D'Antoni's like, yeah, in his pregame game one. Yep, Eric Gordon will be covering LeBron. PG will be on Anthony Davis. Anything else you guys want to know? And people are just laughing and mocking D'Antoni. Eric Gordon should have rushed for about 3,000 yards as senior. If he grew up in Texas, he'd rush for 3,000 yards as senior of high school. He is built like a power tailback.
I do like that Mike D'Antoni understands that there are no secrets. Like, some coaches, when I text them after a game, not head coaches, not necessarily, but like when I'm texting coaches after a game, like, hey, I saw this cut or this thing or whatever, they're like, oh, please. Please don't tweet about that. Please don't write that. I'm like, do you think the other team is like if I'm a dumbass on a laptop can see it, like, the other team figured it out. I'm just like, and Mike D'Antoni's like, yeah, you know, here's our assignments. Here's what we're going to do. I even like the way he answered the Russ question last night. Like, we're going to let him play through it. It's Russell Westbrook. Like, he does imbue his players with a certain, he gives them an allotment of failure, but active failure. like passive failure, not shooting when you're open, not driving when you should, that will get on his nerves. Active failure, he will just be like, Ben McLemore, keep shooting. Like, if you don't shoot, you're not going to play, but shoot. And I think that really, players have talked about it for a long time. Like, he's not on them for mistakes of activity, and I think that gives them a certain freedom and looseness that they can play with. But yeah, Gordon, speaking of defense, you know, I wrote this when I wrote, and I've written it about Houston quite a bit over the years, but it's more apt now, but it was in my Dort column, Dort versus Harden column last week. Part of Houston's, when they're locked in, and I noticed this in the Thunder series more than ever before, we say they switch everything, and they switch a lot of stuff, but when their defense is really locked in is when they understand when they should not switch. And sometimes that's based on who the players involved are. Like, Eric Gordon is not trying to switch off LeBron if that means that Russ is going to be on LeBron, depending on who's screening and cutting and this and that.
And he didn't switch off Chris Paul in certainly down the stretch of Game 7.
And the Lakers have dabbled, and I mean dabbled in like the most tepid way possible, with some like motion-based actions that are designed specifically to beat switches. Like, if you go with like 8:45 left in the first quarter of, I think, Game 1, Anthony Davis off the ball went to set a screen for one of their shooters on the wing and then slipped out of the screen and got a layup. That kind of play is, A, the Lakers should be doing stuff like that way more. B, that's designed to beat a switch. Like, if you're going to switch, I'm slipping out before you get that switch done, and I have inside water on you, I'm going to score. And the Rockets, for the most part, have seen that stuff coming and not switch. So it's paradoxical to say, but part of a good switching defense is understand when and how not to switch. And the Rockets have been, like, on point doing that. And if that continues, like, this team doesn't just have a chance to beat the Lakers. They have a chance to win the championship. You don't think so? Tim just made a face.
Well, again, I just the Rockets last night, the first quarter was a defensive disaster. Other than that, they have played literally the best defense in the league during the playoffs.
And that I keep hearing that.
All right, and it's statistically.
Like, congratulations. You played one team and then another team twice, and the other team that you just played twice has been on offense for like 5 months. Like, it's not – when you play like the Heat a few times, or, you know, the Celtics,
or the Clippers if you get to the next round. My point is, we all expect that the Rockets are going to be an elite offensive team. Whether, you know, we can get caught up in semantics at best, they are playing damn good defense. Is just the point. So yes, that gives them a chance. But
They're competing.
Yes, absolutely. And Harden is absolutely competing, and that sets a huge tone. Obviously, PJ Tucker always competes. Gordon is back to being the dude who shut down Donovan Mitchell in the first round last year. Gordon being an elite defender and, you know, being healthy, that's huge. It's something they haven't had all season long. You know, we always talk about his shot making, but that's obviously, you know, there's a reason that he's guarding Chris Paul late in that series. He's guarding LeBron. But the reason I kind of winced, if Russell Westbrook isn't playing at a superstar level,
no, you're right. You're
you know,
right.
I keep on saying that, but if Russ is shooting sub 40% and, you know, throwing the ball, you know, smacking virtual fans in the faces, or even worse, you know, you can live with those turnovers. What you can't live with is when he goes in there and it's all crazy and he gets his pocket picked and, you know, he's got his arms up because he doesn't like the call. And, you know, next thing you know, he's 70 feet away while LeBron's dunking the ball. Like,
I'm glad you said that, because a lot of my Houston optimism, I'm just sort of assuming that that guy is coming back soon. And if that guy doesn't come back, if peak Russ or 85% of peak Russ doesn't come back, then it's somewhat null and void. But you're right. They lost the game last night on missed shots at the rim and turnovers in the paint. Live ball turnovers are going to kill the Rockets, because the Lakers know that they're struggling in the half court. And if you give them just the faintest whiff of a 5-on-4, you miss a layup and you stumble just a little bit and you're the last one back, they are running and run. And they got a bunch of free points off that in the first quarter, especially.
It's you miss a layup and you're bitching about a call. I mean, and they're not unique to that, but they are probably the bitchiest team in the league, maybe.
Who, Houston?
Yes.
Well, Russ did that in Game 1. He whined to the refs, and the Lakers made him pay with the fast break basket at some point.
The Lakers rank high on that power ranking also.
I mean, most teams are pretty.
The Mavericks with Luke are up there pretty high too. That's why I said probably. Then I toned it down to a maybe.
It's a pretty competitive fight to get into the top 10 of those power rankings. Like I'm more impressed with like who's the clear 30th. Like who's actually not doing it. Who's the most who's the most polite team in the NBA?
Probably a team that we don't watch a whole lot because they didn't
Spurs.
Make the playoffs.
It's got to be the Spurs.
Memphis.
Who's the tankiest team this year? That's probably the one.
So obviously Russell never lacks for confidence, but I just think it's like such a random wrinkle to these first two games where LeBron completely demoralized him with three blocks in the first two games. Like just completely.
And dunking on his head.
And he dunked on his head. But I mean, that's just, you know, sometimes it breaks that way. But I don't know if LeBron's trying to hunt him down or not. But
very rude dunk in that first game. It was very rude.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes! Catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's there up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, watch out for them. You name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
So let's talk about some ways where, like, how can the Lakers loosen up their half-court offense a little bit? Like, we talked only in broad terms about, like, stop playing your centers and play shooting more. Have either of you guys seen anything in the half-court that is like, ooh, that was kind of interesting, I'd like to see more of that, or that can help them get just like we talked about how they're just, like, in mud or just stationary. Like, have you seen anything that, like, I'd like to see a little bit more of that?
I think Dave touched on it earlier. They have to get Anthony Davis the ball on the move, even if it's just like you're setting a screen for him to come post up on the ball, whatever. But just the, okay, AD, you go post up against PJ Tucker, who is going to be bearing his forearm in the small of your back and pushing you all over the place. Like, that ain't it. He's got to get the ball on the move.
I actually think Anthony Davis has looked really good bringing the ball up and running pick and roll as the ball handler. You see it 3 or 4 times a game, and it just gets him going downhill, and he's gotten, like, straight up graceful as a ball handler. Like, even if there's a little traffic and a little bump, like, he's one step finger roll at the rim, and I think mixing it up like that, even if it's just random, even if it's just a grab and go, I just think he's looked very comfortable in that. Dave, you were going to say something. What else have you seen?
Well, Kuzma, you know, he only attempted 1 3 in game 2. And to me, like, he was catching the ball on the wing, ripping it, and getting into the paint and then trying to, you know, make the defense collapse and either shoot over them at that point or dump it off. And you've also saw that a little bit with Caruso. Rather than settling for that corner three, he catches it in the corner, drives baseline, tries to get that extra defender to commit, and it's a quick dump-off pass or maybe a spray-out pass to the other corner. For an open look. And you know, those two guys, as you mentioned earlier, right, they're 31% from three combined. If both those guys aren't settling for threes and just try to continue to put pressure on the Rockets defense and maybe find another shooter or get fouled or whatever, I think that can benefit them in the half court.
And by the way, the Lakers, 18% of their shots have been corner threes through two games only. That's like neck and neck with the Rockets and would have led the league by a long way in the regular season. Like, that's a big number. I'm not sure whether they led the league in the regular season, but it's neck and neck with the Rockets for this playoffs, and it's a big number. They're hunting that shot. I also just think there are ways to get, particularly if you get better spacing. I just like LeBron can attack these guys from the top and from the post. So against Portland, they were doing this thing. You would see it a few times a game where on both sides of the court, they would run like a floppy, like a pin down action for a shooter, and LeBron would have the ball up top. So all four of the defenders on the wing are semi-occupied dealing with stuff on their side of the floor. And LeBron just goes. Like, it's just a decoy for LeBron to isolate. And if you get him in the right matchup, like, they hunted Robert Covington a little bit one-on-one, and you saw the Thunder just destroyed Robert Covington one-on-one. Like, just mixing in a little more. Like, LeBron can get to the rim. Like, that's it. It's over. Mm-hmm. And mixing in a little bit more stuff like that. They also ran a, just once, LeBron, Danny Green, Anthony Davis staggered screen, where the first screen was Danny Green. That got Russ onto LeBron. And all of a sudden, the Rockets are in a matchup that they don't want to switch. And then LeBron goes into a pick and roll with Anthony Davis. And all of a sudden, it's just a regular pick and roll. Like, the defense drops back. He sprays a ball. That's where Kuzma hit his three, I think, Dave. That's where he sprayed the ball to Kyle for a corner three. Just mixing it up a little bit like that, I think there are little ways that they can poke at the Rockets.
And you mentioned Covington. Covington is a guy that you can hunt. And people might be like, what are you talking about? One of the main reasons the Rockets got him is because of his defense. He is an elite help defender. He is not a one-on-one shutdown guy. And so the Rockets there's a reason that the Rockets didn't put him on LeBron. Is he, he's not a guy who you say, hey, you know, you're our stopper. He's a guy who, you know, you want coming over to help the stopper. You know, he's their best rim protector. You know, his steals usually come in help situations. And, you know, the other thing, obviously, the best way the Lakers can solve their half-court offensive problems are to avoid the half-court, to get out and run. But it's not just the fast break. Like, there's one play last night where, you know, LeBron senses an opportunity, and, you know, next thing you know, he's got a seal on Eric Gordon, you know, a couple feet from the bucket. It's an easy bucket. LeBron has to, and that's hard work when you're a superstar playing 40 minutes to run that hard, fight for that position. But there's opportunities there when a 6'9 dude's being guarded by a 6'3 guy.
Well, that's a great play. I'm glad you mentioned that. It was in my notes because LeBron ran from behind the play ahead of the play because he knew we're kind of maxed out on shooting. So I'm going to have a lot of space if I get there, and I can get there. And I just always think back in this sort of tale of LeBron's career to game 7 against the Pacers a couple of seasons ago. Remember when the Pacers like somehow took the Lakers to 7 games?
Oh, yeah.
And in that game, LeBron was finally like, season is on the line. I'm posting up Lance Stephenson every single time we have the ball. I haven't really been doing this that much through 6 games because we got a little bit of an margin for error. Now we don't. I'm just going to destroy this guy, and they're going to send double teams and triple teams, and that's I'm taking us through this game by myself. I think he's going to have a game or two like that in this series. I think Houston is good enough to push them that far that LeBron, and not really Davis, because LeBron has it, like, you're not moving P.J. Tucker backward. And if P.J. Tucker's on Anthony Davis, that's
jump shots for him. Yep.
And LeBron's just such a much better passer, obviously. I just feel like that gear is going to have to be engaged. And I took note of that play that you mentioned, Tim, specifically because I was like, he's just going to, it's hard, man. The dude is 36 years old or whatever. How old is he, Dave? 36? 35.
35. Yeah.
And he's third all time in minutes played. Like, it's remarkable how good he still is, but I think he's going to need to really have some just, it's me and I'm taking us all the way to the finish line.
I mean, look, how crazy is it that his bald spot was even with the rim on that lob that he caught? That is the highest a bald spot has ever been in NBA history.
Wow. Just taking aim at the hair.
You are so wrong.
What? It's a compliment to his ridiculous athleticism at his advanced age.
Advanced age?
Well, I'm older than him, so I can say that.
Me too.
LeBron averaged he averaged like 4.5 post-ups per game against Portland. And, you know, the only times it really stood out to me was when he got it going against Trent, because they had like kind of a game within a game going on a little bit. Now, I asked our research folks, he only had 4 post-ups in game 1. I'm not sure what he had in game 2. But, yeah, I think you'll see more of that because no one can handle him there, really. Now, the thing is, people wonder, and I don't really subscribe to this, but sometimes you wonder, does he not do it more often because – if he gets to the foul line, he's not 100% confident going there with regularity. And I don't know the answer is there, but that
he's
could
not,
be.
He's not Giannis, man. He's a good foul shooter. I'm not buying that.
I just think it's hard. It is hard to fight for post position. It is hard to sprint the floor and try to get that early position. When you're playing that many minutes and he's engaged defensively, like, dude, that's asking a 35, whatever, or however old he is, a guy that age to play with that much energy. That's playing every other day. That's a lot.
And, you know, Tim, you alluded to this when you said the best way to cure their half court offense is to not play in the half court. The two battlegrounds that are interesting in this series statistically, other than sort of, you know, specific digging down, are rebounding and turnovers. And so far, yep. Houston is winning those on its terms. Houston has forced turnovers on 17% of the Lakers' possessions. That would have been number one in the league in the regular season. That's a lot. And the live ball turnovers killed the Lakers in game one. And defensive rebounding, 75% defensive rebounding rate. That's totally fine. They've actually had a higher defensive rebounding rate than the Lakers in this series by like a percentage point. If those things persist, again, those are little bellwethers to monitor. And look, if the Lakers can't win the offensive rebounding battle like handily, and they haven't, then I think that's even more reason to, instead of like being hell bent on winning it, to go the other way and just play like, let's just play our best shooting lineups and give LeBron spacing, because we're not destroying them on the offensive glass anyway.
And you look at the first quarter last night, which obviously was a total disaster for the Rockets, and they committed a ton of turnovers. And they got beat up on the glass, and you know, they just got basically run off the floor. And then they clean those areas up the rest of the game. And next thing you know, you look up and you're like, oh wow, we've actually got a competitive game here that was a 21-point deficit at one point.
The one last thing, when we talk about, you know, obviously how they defend Harden is going to be the most fun thing to watch in the whole series. And I mentioned that I thought that Kuzma and AD were really on point rotating behind the ball.
Yeah.
The corner threes are a huge battleground in this series. So if listeners want to do this, if you look at just within 3 minutes left in the first quarter of game two, Kuzma made a rotation that they're going to have to make a lot, and he nailed it over and over again. They trapped Harden, so they're zoning up behind the play. It's three defenders against four offensive players. Kuzma is between, on the left sideline, between Austin Rivers on the wing and I think Tucker on the corner, or no, House on the corner. Harden passes to Rivers, or someone passes to Rivers. Kuzma stunts at Rivers, so he can't shoot a three. It's like, I've taken away a three. Rivers blows by him. Kuzma in that moment has a decision to make. Do I chase him? Where am I rotating if I'm not chasing him? You watch that play. He does an immediate U-turn to the corner because he knows, A, someone is going to pick Austin Rivers up in the paint. I don't know who it is, but someone's going to be there. And B, Daniel House is over here. I can't forget about him. I have to be there. That U-turn, Davis made it a bunch of times on point. Kuzma made it a bunch of times. Like, that's the kind of thing. Like, that's really, it's just hard to keep track of everything, even though these guys are the best in the world at it. Like, those little things, if they're going to play defense that way, and I think, Like you can't give James Harden a steady diet of anything. He's too good.
He's too smart. He's too smart.
You can't trap him every time. Yeah.
Yeah. People, I get, like you said earlier, I get not appreciating watching Harden, but the guy, talk to any coach who has had a game plan for him, and one of the first things, if they're not bitching about him getting the line, one of the first things they will mention is just how smart he is and how you might be able to fool him with something maybe one time, but if you give him the same thing, he's just going to pick you apart. And he is an elite passer and a brilliant passer in the sense that he makes the right pass every single time.
Yeah, he's a really good passer. And then Jeff Van Gundy mentioned it, I think, on the broadcast last night, that he's an underrated passer. I think that's actually still true.
Or a guy who won an assist title, you know, but people – you know, it's like when Giannis made the joke, I want somebody who passes. Like, the dude's won an assist title.
Yeah, it hasn't gone well for Giannis in the playoffs. Anyway, go ahead, Dave.
We may not want to go too far down this road, but Kuzma does deserve some credit for his defensive development and commitment in this postseason. In the first round, he held Portland offensive players to 35% shooting when he guarded him, which was like 10% better than he did in the regular season. And last night, one of the more notable plays, like, we remember Caruso finding LeBron for an alley-oop on the break, which is great. But that was started by Kuzma, you know, getting his body in front of Russell Westbrook and poking it away, and they ignited the break, and like, you know, beating Russell Westbrook to the spot. And I don't know. So I've been impressed by, you know, he's adding little wrinkles to his game. He's not the third option. It's not a big three. He's kind of out of his depth if you're trying to make him that guy. But he gives them, you know, a mixed bag, and he has the will to try to make this thing work. So it's you know, he's the guy still figuring out who he is on this team. Pretty much everybody else knows who they are on that team. And so he's a fascinating watch.
I totally agree. I wrote about it after the first round. All that's missing from Kyle Kuzma being the ideal version of him for this team is making threes, because he's defended hard. He's moved the ball. He defended CJ McCollum okay for parts of that first round series, which is like, that's not easy, man. PJ McCollum, it's like trying to catch a fish with your bare hands, man. That guy is
impossible.
PJ Tucker could. PJ Tucker could catch a fish with one hand. He doesn't even need the second.
He just
catch
him with his teeth.
Maybe I should just devote the next 2 weeks to just imaginary, like PJ Tucker versus animals fan fiction. Maybe that just should be the whole podcast. Bring on animal experts and be. Is Dr. Jack Hanna still alive? Young people don't even know who Dr. Jack Hanna is. Bring him on. Dr. Jack, here's an hour of film on PJ Tucker. Okay, PJ Tucker versus a cheetah. How does this go down? The cheetah obviously have a speed advantage. Okay.
Well, the cheetah would have the advantage in transition, but half court, I'm taking PJ.
I just think there's a lot to plumb here. Okay, you guys have a lot of work to do. Dave, how's Orlando?
It's very basic living. I spend time from about 2 a.m. to 10 a.m. sleeping. Maybe if I'm feeling ambitious, walk the golf course a couple times. And then I go to the gym from like 2 till 2.
I have to.
We saw your coffee mug. It ain't that basic living.
Do you wake up? Did you take a shower? You look put together and hand. Do you just wake up with this McMenamin hair all very nicely done?
I got a haircut down here, which was nice. The one thing we had to remember, we had to go get tested. So like this morning, I got up earlier than I normally would have, because twice a week we get tested in the yellow zone. So
do you get text alerts like, hey, 30 minutes, be here, or you just got to remember?
Just got to remember. And so like, you know, I think it was in the seeding round where DeAndre Ayton missed the test. And I think like, you know, some people on Twitter were like, oh, you know, it's very understandable. Like, you know, it's not like a natural instinct, like brushing your teeth. Like you just got to remember to go get tested. And there's times, like in our zone, you got to get it done by a certain time. I think in green, you can go, you know, within a 24-hour period.
Doesn't it seem, time has obviously lost all meaning at this point, but doesn't it seem like 6 months ago that the Suns went 8-0? Like the Suns, it was unbelievable. It happened. It was the biggest story in the NBA. The playoffs start and you're so dialed in on the playoffs and the storylines, like, I just like the Suns. Remember the Suns? Like, that was cool. It just feels like it happened 6 months ago.
Yeah, and Dame scoring 61 and 50 and this, that, and the other. Like, yes, it does seem like forever ago.
All right, Tim and Dave, do some animal research, and maybe we'll reconvene for a PJ Tucker-themed podcast next week. Continue the great work, guys, and this is going to be a fun series. I hope it goes a long way.
Appreciate it, fellas.